We are 12 days away from Election Day, November the 5th. It's right around the corner, but millions of people around the country are already voting, including hundreds of thousands in South Carolina. We'll analyze what that could mean for not only the general election, but many contested state House seats and state Senate seats. The whole Jesus is Lord controversy, I'll broach the topic today because I feel like we need to. And then what are the issues shaping the race for president? We'll look at that today on the Palmetto Family Matters Show. Welcome in. It is Thursday, October 24th in the year of our Lord, 2024. I miss my bell. I miss my ding. I'll do it for myself. Ding, ding. Justin Hall, Randy Page here with you on the program. Thanks so much for riding along and being a part. Hopefully we can brighten your day. Is that how that works? We're the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina, though. That should brighten your day.
Absolutely.
That should make you think, okay, all is right in the world as we slowly descend into madness. Speaking of madness, we're 12 days away from Election Day. There's a lot to get into here. Early voting has started in South Carolina. It started on Monday. And as we were sitting in the office yesterday, we don't have the latest numbers today, but after 2 days of early voting, 250,000 people have voted already in South Carolina.
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. When you think about it, about 2.3-ish million people voted in the last two presidential election years. 2016, high voter turnout because of who was at the top of the Republican ticket. 2020, kind of the same thing, but it was also COVID and the whole thing, blah, 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 blah. We remember 2020, or we try to forget it.
We try to forget it.
Yeah. But Randy, as you're looking at that number, I find that number fascinating, first of all, because in a primary election, we're usually right around 11% voter turnout. In 2020, we were at 70% voter turnout, which is insanely high. Are we going to clear that hurdle just because of early voting alone, seemingly? If this trend continues, we're going to be well over 1 million people have already voted before I go to the ballot box on Election Day because it's just my thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to look at these numbers. You know, when you're talking about 250,000 people voted in the first 2 days of early voting, mm-hmm. that day one set an early voting record. Day two eclipsed mm-hmm. day one's early voting record. So, I mean, it's huge. You know, I think that people that are across the state, they're ready to vote. They're tired of seeing commercials. They're tired of getting texts. I know I'm tired of getting texts.
Is it true that as soon as you vote, the texts stop?
They don't, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. That's a rumor.
I do think if there was some way that the texting companies could work that in, that, you know, everybody would vote day one.
Incentivization, right?
So, but it does look to be as if it's going to be a very high turnout. You know, it'd be interesting to see for the, you know, number of days that we have yet remaining for early voting,
right?
Because there are quite a few days yet.
Yep.
Is the excitement going to, you know, continue through that? If so, is Election Day going to be like a walk in the park to where nobody shows up?
Well,
so it'll be interesting to watch.
And I said that I vote on Election Day. It is because I'm in where I'm located and where I live. It's a small town. And I was telling the guys in the office today, I have voted in every election since 2014. That would be Nikki Haley's reelect. That's 10 years of voting every 2 years. Give me the button. I've never had to wait to walk into the booth, if that makes sense. It's just, even on the busiest of election days, it's just never really a wait time for me. So I can go before work, I can go after work, I can take a lunch break and drive home and do it. I don't care, whatever. But for those of you who feel like, ooh, you know, you're apt to not want to wait in line. You're apt to, on election day, you're driving, you're like, you drive by the polling place and the line's out the door. Like, I don't want to do that. I'll do it when I get off work. And then you get off work and it's already later than you thought and suddenly it's 6:30 and like, I haven't seen the kids. Go ahead and go vote. Like, I'm going to vote on election day, but you don't get an extra points for voting on election day. Like, your vote counts. And you know what? You can vote on election day. You can early vote. And if you have some inclination or some reservation, you can always go do a provisional if you want. I don't care. One of them's not going to count. Right? You can't vote twice. Turns out you can't. So what we're seeing here, the early voting numbers, though, Randy, tells me that you are in a situation here where the Republican nominee for president has sort of embraced early voting. The Republican apparatus at the top of the Grand Ole Party has really embraced early voting. Might that be the key to victory in certain swing states? Pennsylvania, probably. Can we, I don't know if it's a direct corollary. This is the correlation causation thing. Right. I don't think more early votes means Republican victory. Correct. But I don't think more early votes necessarily means Democrat victory.
Correct.
As we would have thought in 2020.
Absolutely. I mean, there's been a huge shift, especially in the Republican Party, on early vote to where, you know, I think prior elections, it was always, you need to vote day of.
Yes.
That was kind of the Republican doctrine. And then that has changed.
The dogma.
And I do believe that, you know, more Republicans have embraced it.
Sure.
Just because it is relatively easy to do. You know, the polls are open, you know, from what, 8:30 to 6?
It's the same as Election Day.
Every day except for the Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
They're even open on that Saturday.
Yeah.
And so.
Go before the games.
So that's, you know, really, really good. You know, I think, you know, we're looking at, you know, probably voting later this week in Greenville, because I got pictures of early voting stations in Greenville and long lines. And so I was like, I really don't want to go stand in that line, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, do they continue, you know, do they crest and then start to fall?
Yeah.
But, you know, just from looking at, you know, the data that we've already seen, there's a lot of interest in this election. And, you know, we've got a lot of seats up for election. And I'm sure we'll get into the nitty-gritty later on in the podcast, but it's good to see. I think it's good for people to get out and be involved.
Yeah, 12 days until, and this is, we're saying 12 days, and you got early voting, and yes, the Republican the presidential race does kind of suck up most of the oxygen in the room, and also blow out a lot of hot air. But what it does do is it drives home the fact that this is. Not the most consequential election of our lifetime. It's just the next one. And as each election goes, you kind of dictate how your country moves. And just in the last several days, and we talked about this in the office as well, because early voting starts October 21st here, North Carolina was earlier, Pennsylvania was much earlier, there's no room for the October surprise anymore. Everything's kind of baked in. And so what happens as you close in on early voting does matter. For example, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has been on several shows, town halls, podcasts, different kinds of media. I'm telling you that if you venture over to X, you would think he's going to run away with this thing. The social media tech online bros, it appears he's really driving that. Meanwhile, you've got Kamala Harris, who is doing the more sit-down NBC, sit-down ABC, CBS, CNN town hall on the night when they're supposed to do a second debate, which, why would you need another debate? We should stop having them all together. But she's doing more of those things, The View, right? The center of all political thought. So you're seeing a dichotomous approach to this election. But I just want to really quickly think about this election cycle and this campaign season that we've had. Again, we're 12 days out. So both nominees are nominated based on their elections and the primaries. Then
or
there's
not.
Well, no. We're going timeline. We're going chronological here. Oh, I got you. Okay. Oh, I'm with you. Don't worry. Then June happens. You have a debate. Joe Biden basically ceases to exist on stage. Because of that, the entire apparatus behind him goes, oh, this ain't gonna work. So then they install the Manchurian candidate, if you will, who's an empty suit, and she wins no votes. She could literally be the first president in the United States to never win a primary vote ever. Not a vote in a primary. Not one. That could happen. So they replace her. The Republican candidate gets attempted assassinations on his life twice. Then we have the conventions. Now we're to the point where we're kind of dueling back and forth. We have a debate between those two that really doesn't go Trump's way. And Kamala's so cool and so brat, and that works out. Then we have a VP debate that's very cordial and, oh, gosh, Minnesota. And it's nice. And then we move from that. Now we're into the SNL part of the campaign, where now they're spoofing everybody on SNL. And then something strange has happened. I pull up Twitter on Sunday, and I thought it was AI, because former President Trump, the 45th president and possibly the 47th president of the United States, is working the fry station at a McDonald's in the very county where his life was almost ended just months prior. You can't make this up. So he's shoveling fries, and it's very old school politicking.
Right.
It's, I'm handing you your fries. Hey, you guys are great. Thanks so much. Hope you vote. And it's just like, this makes sense. Meanwhile, the other one is on the illustrious Call Her Daddy podcast, as well as at a rally. And I want to get into this for just a second. At a rally over the weekend, Friday, where someone shouted out Jesus is Lord, and she said, oh, you're at the wrong rally. I just want to offer these two options to you as you think critically about this. I am not here to tell you that any person is the Antichrist. I think you'll know when you know. Just saying. We have various scriptures that lend to that. What I will say is there seems to be a contempt for folks of legitimate biblical faith and values and understanding of the Judeo-Christian norms. I believe there is some animosity there. So that's one side. The other side is I do believe that her handlers have given her two or three canned responses for specific hecklers based on what they're heckling. And if you don't, ma'am, if you don't quite understand what they're saying, say this. And then take a shot at Donald Trump's crowd sizes. So I believe it's both. The telling thing is the campaign hasn't walked it back. That's the telling thing, is the campaign did not come out and go, oh, no, she didn't hear. No, she's just, no. They're acting as if it didn't even happen. But it did, and I think you need to know that. Number two, and the more interesting thing is, she then goes to churches the next day in Atlanta, or 2 days later in Atlanta, to celebrate her 60th birthday. Kamala Harris, and this is, again, this is not ageist, I just need to make the point. Kamala Harris usurped the guy who had the nomination, politically shivved him in the back, the whole party did, politically shivved him in the back to install her as the candidate, having never won a primary vote because of a youth and a new way forward, and she's 60. 60. And I'm not ageist.
Now you're treading on some stuff there.
No. I just think it's important to understand, like, she's not youthful and exuberant and not full of joy. This is weird. So you have all of this happening in the frame of early voting starting. And she can't recount the other night on NBC what state she's been in, which is very easy because there are only so many swing states that you've been to. Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada. Yeah, there you go. That's it. That's all of them. Now, the issues that drive the campaign, because we're about to get into very local stuff here, statewide stuff. The number one issue, in my opinion, and my opinion in a dollar will get you a stick of gum, but it appears to be it's immigration. It appears to be immigration, one. Because the economy, while it hasn't been great, it's kind of baked in now. I went to the fair. It's kind of baked in. So it's there. Are there some things that look to be improving? Maybe. But it's kind of baked in that people already feel bad about the economy. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to change their mind in the last 2 weeks. It's not going to happen. So immigration, economy, inflation would probably be my three. Then you get into the domestic policy stuff, right? Your abortion, transgenderism, all the rest. Now, again, I have problems with what Donald Trump said about transgenderism, that there should you can't have a gender transition surgery without parental consent. Or you could have just left it alone.
Period. Full stop.
Now, he did go back and kind of walk that back a little bit, which is fine. Again, more to my claim that I don't think really anybody running for the presidency is conservative at this point. And then you got the foreign policy stuff. There are two wars still happening. And whether you want to continue them or end them, how do you want to end them? There could be a third one. Reports are that North Korean soldiers are now in Russia. There are a lot of issues that are going to start bubbling up to the surface here as we get down the stretch. And I'm sorry, but I think every single one of those breaks right. I think every single one of them breaks to the right. Now, we looked at the latest polling, and I can tell you the latest polling right here. This is wild to me.
It is. I mean, it's incredible.
Biden's underwater by 15. 38-point margin, say we're on the wrong track as a country, in the national poll, Harris is plus 1.1. If that's true, Donald Trump wins going away. Like,
electoral landslide.
By the way, I forgot the Al Smith dinner happened. She wasn't there. Catholics make up a significant portion of the electorate in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and Arizona, and Nevada, and Florida, and Texas, and in a lot of states. In the battlegrounds, just in the battleground states, Trump is plus 1.1. If that number's true, it's over. In the battleground states, this is the RCP average of the battleground states. In Pennsylvania, plus 0.8 for Trump. All these are for Trump. 0.4 in North Carolina, 2.5 in Georgia, 1.8 in Arizona, 0.4 in Wisconsin, 1.2 in Michigan, 0.9 in Nevada. Now, we sent in our Palmetto Family Insider email yesterday. If you aren't a part of our mailing list, go to our website, palmettofamily.org, and subscribe to be a part of our mailing list to get these. The lead story on that email was how polling is having to adjust to what happened in 2020 and what happened in 2016. I still think polls are underestimating some vote here.
And, you know, and it's interesting, too. I mean, as you talk through each one of those, every poll you just cited is within the margin of error.
All of them.
However, the other thing we've seen is, you know, last week when we looked at these very same polls, they're breaking harder for Trump this week, and there's more of a separation.
Yep.
I think there was one poll that was like two, because I think last week when we looked at it, or the week before, I don't think there was anything above 1.0.
Georgia's 2.5.
Right.
I'd imagine that has changed quite a bit over the course of... Trump 2.5. I'd have to look at the change of time here. By the way, on this date in 2016, Trump was plus 4 over Hillary. In 2020, on this date, he was trailing Biden by 0.8 and lost by how many thousand votes? Not many.
It's tight.
So it was very tight, tight enough to want to go find me the votes. I will tell you, and here's your look at Georgia. Once the Biden split happens, at one point, this was in early September, Harris was leading. Trump, it dropped again, got down to about 0.5, but Trump's been consistently leading in Georgia based on the polling since mid-September. And now it's breaking even more. Now we see the split really widening from, you mentioned, 0.9 on October 16th. A week ago it was 0.9. Today's conglomeration is 2.5. That's
a big split.
It's 1.6. So as we see the numbers continuing to move, and again, these are all going to change, and none of it's going to matter on November 5th. None of it's going to matter because it's who shows up or who has shown up.
Correct.
Based on the early voting.
Right.
Now, not only is the presidency up, not only are some Senate seats up, none in South Carolina.
Right.
But the House of Representatives is up. All 7 congressional seats in South Carolina up for election. That would include, well, all of them. And then there are some that the incumbent will not be the next person. So you might see a lot of new faces in Congress representing the state of South Carolina. But when it comes to within the state house, all 170 seats are open for business, as I like to say. 170 legislative seats. Joe Bustos, thank you to Joe Bustos, good friend from behind the camera at a lot of these events that we're at, had a piece back in September that I believe is worth revisiting. He wrote this, and then we're going to get to how you need to look at your sample ballot here in a minute, because there is a question on there that we need to get to. In the Senate, only 27 of the state's 46 Senate seats will have contested elections. And this will be the first time that we've seen these newly drawn Senate seats in an election. That took place back in 2020. He writes, Republicans who control both chambers can look to go on offense in the Senate. And they kind of had. They did in the primary.
Absolutely.
and 7 seats, Senate districts 17, 26, my district, 29, 30, 35, and 39 could be seen as competitive, according to analysis by Dave's Redistricting. Most of those districts, by the way, are in the PD and the Midlands. And Brad Hutto is quoted in this piece. Brad Hutto argues, minority leader, argues that the Senate District 41 race in the Lowcountry, Matt Lieber unseated Sandy Sinn in the primary. He's going up against Rita Atkins, the Democrat. Charleston's kind of funky. That's a competitive seat. And Republicans in Charleston are different than Republicans in Greenville. And in the Midlands, for that matter. That could be a very competitive seat and one you need to look out for. Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey, friend of the program, expects he'll be able to add to his ranks, writes Bustos, and doesn't believe that his members of his caucus will fall below 30. But they're looking at several different districts. Senate District Seat 17 is held by Mike Fanning right now. That one could be a problem for Democrats. Again, that is a very large district. And it is rural. And rural districts are breaking Republican right now.
Right. And this is where you really see coattails from the top of the ticket.
Correct.
Taking effect.
Correct.
If the Republican is leading, it can take a fairly normal district and flip it several points one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, particularly in that race, you know, I think in the Sumter Senate race, you know, some others where it could really make a huge difference because if a Republican does really well at the national level.
Exactly. And that goes into this next point too. Senate District 39, Berkeley, Calhoun, Collin, Dorchester, Orangeburg counties. Senator Vernon Stevens. By the way, Stevens and Fanning were the only ones who voted against the redistricting. Only two, period. Only two. They're both rural areas. They trend Republican right now. And you mentioned top of the ticket. I don't mean to spoil surprises, but I think you're going to be able to hear, we can call South Carolina, I think you'll be able to hear that around 7:07.
Or earlier.
Or earlier on election night, in my opinion. Here's one that I didn't think about. This is what Bustos writes. Senate District 29, held by Gerald Malloy, could be in play for Republicans in a contested race.
And I've been hearing more and more about that particular race. You know, at first when someone brought it up to me, I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, I believe it has changed in the redistricting. And, you know, the PD as an area has started to trend more and more Republican mm-hmm. over the years. You know, I remember, you know, 30 years ago when David Beasley was running for governor from the PD.
Right.
And it was like, you're running a Republican for governor from the PD?
Exactly.
You know, what's up with that?
Yeah.
And so, but, you know, obviously I think you've seen the trend lines in those counties over there, whether it's Florence County, whether it's, you know, some of the other, you know, Darlington County, some of the other counties in the PD that
right.
more and more Republicans are being elected.
There's no question about that. There's a couple of more here that I want to get into. By the way, Gerald Malloy is running against J.D. Jeplin for that seat, and Mike Fanning is up against Everett Stubbs, and let me find Vernon Stevens is taking on Tom Fernandez, Republican there. Do want to mention a couple of other ones. Senate seat 26, which is mine, that's going to change hands for the first time in my lifetime, plus 10 years, because Nikki Setzler retired and decided not to run for re-election, which I never thought I'd live to see the day, so it's been kind of weird driving around near my house and not seeing a Setzler sign. That seat's up, and that's going to come down to Russell Ott, who represents Calhoun County in the House, against Jason Gary on the Republican side. That district, even though it was redrawn, still leans Republican by about probably a 3-point margin when it comes to voting. That district, by the way, Calhoun, Lexington, Richland. Name three more different counties.
Wow.
Even though they're very close. Like, you don't have to go too far down 26 from my house to get to Calhoun County. It's crazy. But it's just wild to think about that. Those are three places that are in the same district. Again, remember, Russell Ott defeated Dick Harpootlian because they were drawn into the same district. Harpootlian was drawn into the same district as Nikki Setzler.
Right.
So, interesting note there. Those are just some of the Senate races. By the way, there are a few more here that I'll mention. District 35, which is, I believe that's Penry Gustafson's old seat, Jeffrey Graham is running against Mike Jones. And then Kent Williams in District 30, Kent Williams is the current sitting senator, running against Rodney Berry in that one. And then District 36 is currently held by State Senator Kevin Johnson. He's running against Jeffrey Zell in that one. And that Senate District 36 does include parts of Sumter County, Clarendon County. That one can get a little wild and funky too. Again, you're talking about a rural area. And again, top of the ticket, who's at the top and where are you voting at? Could really drive these changes. The House. So Republicans have a supermajority.
And they will continue to have a supermajority.
I would argue now, while the Republicans can go on offense in the House or in the Senate, Joe Bustos posits that the House might have more opportunities. The Democrats might have more opportunities on offense in the House. Whether that's true or not, we shall see. He lists three districts here in particular to watch, districts 64, 116, and 122. They were flipped red in 2022, but all of them have one thing in common. They are in Jim Clyburn's congressional district. I don't know what that means. Republicans flipped District 12 last time around. Majority Leader Davey Hyatt does mention that when you flip a House seat, that next time around, it can easily bounce back as a rubber band effect. Something to keep an eye on. Heather Bauer, Democrat representative from this area, right down the road. I'll see your signs if I go out to lunch. Welcome back, Kirkman Finley. He's running against her and could win. I mean, he represented the district before. I don't see why he couldn't. It's not out of the realm of possibility, as I like to say, with college football being a thing. So here's the other thing that you might need to keep an eye on. Top of the ticket on the Republican side, top of the ticket on the Democratic side. If it's true that Kamala Harris is gaining energy and momentum and all the rest and all the joy, could that filter down to some of these House seats? Certainly. Just because it does it one way doesn't mean it can't the other way.
Correct.
So that could happen, especially in some of these places that are usually more democratically controlled, but flipped Republican in 22. Right. You could see that happen.
Absolutely.
Now, in order for Democrats to not be a super minority anymore, they have 36 seats. They need to pick up six. These are the contested races. I don't know if they can get six seats. I don't know if they can do it because there are some interesting numbers here. Representative Lucas Atkinson is in a contested race right now. Fawn Petalino in District 64 is in a contested race. Obviously, we mentioned Heather Bauer. Tom Hartnett in 110 is in a contested race. Spencer Wetmore is in a contested race down in Charleston. Again, Charleston. I don't know if her district overlaps with Sandy Sins, former state senator Sandy Sins. If they do, that little button up there that says vote straight ticket carries a lot of juice.
Yes.
And you might want to be careful about it. You're going to have a new representative in 116, and Bill Hager is in one in 122 with Audrey Hopkins Williams. That's a contested race down there as well. So all that to say, while the presidential race is going to get a lot of the glitz and the glamour in the eyes, and there are going to be some Senate races that you need to watch in Texas and in Ohio, can Republicans take back the Senate? Do the Democrats take the House? I think all those are important. I root for gridlock. But if you're uninterested in that, I do think the government closest to you affects you most. So go to scvotes.gov on election night. Just keep hitting refresh, right, and watch the results roll in, because I do believe these are some competitive races. And I think Republicans have an opportunity to really supermajority proof themselves in both sides. But if the energy is there, could Democrats close the gap? Maybe.
Well, maybe. Right. And the interesting thing, too, on election night, yes, SC Votes is a place to go.
AP is, too.
My favorite place is the New York Times. They seem to have some of the fastest numbers available. So,
remember that one?
New York Times?
Remember that one, NYT. All right, so a lot of people text me, starting now, we're 12 days away, I'm going to start getting texts, humble brag, I guess, about who should I vote for? Who should I vote for? Well, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but I will tell you how to get your sample ballot. So here's how you get your sample ballot. You go to scvotes.gov. You click on voter, and you get my sample ballot. You'll have to input your county, your first and last name, your date of birth, and your social, last four. They already know it.
That's right.
Just deal with it. They do. That you registered to vote. All right, so then you pull up your sample ballot. And you know what? Full disclosure, here's mine. I'm not going to put it on the screen because it has my mailing address. And I ain't needing all that. All right, so I happen to be in a place where my state house rep, I only have one person on the ballot, but you could write in someone if you wanted to. So we'll skip over that one for now. Obviously, you have your presidential race. I look forward to casting my ballot for the Constitution Party. And then in the House of Representatives, we have a House seat there. State Senate seat, I mentioned earlier, Russell Ott, Jason Geary. And then a lot of people running on their own. No contested race. My voting days are usually pretty easy. Not going to lie, because I can either vote for somebody or write them in.
Yeah, literally, you've just got a bunch of one names.
I do, until I get to the school board.
You got lots of names.
And you can pick. Now, remember this. Typically, you can vote for up to four. You can vote for less, but you can choose up to four. Someone should have told 18-year-old Justin that in his first election. Okay? You can vote for as many as you want up to the threshold. It'll tell you there. Now, there is a statewide constitutional amendment on the ballot.
Yes.
Let's read it together. This is I'm reading it verbatim. Quote, must Section 4, Article 2 of the Constitution of this state relating to voter qualifications be amended so as to provide that only a citizen of the United States and of this state of the age of 18 and upward who is properly registered is entitled to vote as proposed by law. That's a lot of words. A lot of words and a lot of commas and all the rest. So should the Constitution of this state be amended so that only those who are 18 and older who are citizens of the United States in this state be able to vote? If you believe that only citizens of this state in the United States should be allowed to vote in elections, you would choose yes. If you believe that non-citizens should be able to vote in elections, you would choose no. If you believe that only citizens should vote in this election or any election, you should vote yes. That's just, there are a lot of words. And this is just reading comprehension for me. I always just go ahead and mark out that relating to voter qualifications, right? Should this article of the Constitution be amended to provide that only a citizen of the United States in this state, 18 or older, be allowed to vote? I mean, vote your conscience. Vote your biblical values. What do you believe? I'll let you make that determination. But it seems to be pretty straightforward. But there will always be questions about a constitutional amendment because the immediate one, Randy, is trying to get me.
Right.
Trying to trick me.
That's right.
What are they trying to trick me? Let me explain something to you. In this state, those who put the constitutional amendments forward usually aren't trying to trick you. Right. This ain't Ohio. Right. This ain't Prop 36 in California, right? By the way, as we near Election Day, visit our website, palmettofamily.org. At the very top, got a cute little banner there, a little flippy banner thingy. You can get the online version of our 2023-2024 legislative scorecard. I wanted to put in a little commercial for this one, if this is okay. Because in this, we have specific legislation that we have tracked. These are the specific pieces of legislation that we chose to track in the previous session, which is a two-year session. There were more. But these were, I believe, the most consequential. On these, if you voted along with our position that is stated at the front, you received a plus. If you voted against our position, you received a minus. There are carve-outs for excused absences or out of offices or did not vote, yada, yada, yada. And inside of it, you will find who's here. Now, for example, for me, and I'm not going to read the votes out loud, but my two state Senate candidates, let's take that for example. Jason Geary did not hold office right in 2023 and 2024, so I'm not going to find him here. But I would find Russell Ott under the House section of our 125th legislative session, legislative scorecard, and I could look at how he voted on each of these bills that were tracked. You can go look it up and see what his percentage score is with us. I'm not going to say it out loud. But as you look at these 40 things, you're looking at a way for you to see this is how my representative or how my senator voted. And do they align with my values? Right. As we look at these elections, we talked about 12 days until election day, and here's the polling, and here are the issues, and here are the contested races. At the end of the day, are you voting biblical values? And is the person you're voting for, male or female, are they representing your biblical values well? At the end of the day, that's the question.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think one thing about a legislative scorecard is it looks at what they have done, how they have voted. It is not an endorsement. Palmetto Family Council does not endorse.
We can't.
And so these literally, it just tells you what they did and how they voted and then gives a percentage. So you can look at that on our website, obviously at palmettofamily.org.
Yeah. And again, not an endorsement. It's just how they voted. But again, if you vote 80% or more with these issues, I'd say that's a pretty good benchmark for voting biblical values in your held political office. And again, we're going to go do plenty of things in 2025, 2026. There are going to be a lot of issues that come up that we're going to track those. Don't you worry. We're going to be tracking legislation all the time. Don't you worry about that. 12 days until Election Day. If you aren't registered to vote, sorry, you ran out of time. Hopefully you did heed our warnings as prophets in the wilderness telling you to register to vote. Hopefully you did that. If you want to go vote, go vote. Visit your county election office Monday through Friday, Saturday, from 8:30 to 6.
30.
Stand in line. Yeah, stand in line. Vote. Get your little sticker. Post it on social media because that's a requirement apparently. And then say, yeah, I'm done. And now on election day, I can just kind of sit back and let it ride. Or if you'd rather vote on election day, just promise me you'll vote. Promise me you'll vote. That's all I ask. We talked about the millions of Christians who say they're not going to vote. Please vote. Please. I'm not begging you. I'm just asking you with some pleading. Vote. And then if you want to know more about Palmetto Family in the meantime, I'm glad you asked. Palmettofamily.org is where you can go. Again, sign up for that email newsletter. You'll get our insider emails. You will get our weekly emails. You will get our podcast sent directly to your inbox. That way you don't have to go fishing for it. It's right there at a click of a button. You can do it. So sign up for that. If you want to donate to our organization, we would greatly appreciate that because it is because of your investment that we're able to do the work that we're doing, both to do research and create things like this, as well as reach out to churches and talk about the biblical worldview that we are hoping to put at the forefront of the state of South Carolina, amongst many, many other litany of things. Litany, your SAT word of the day. That we do here at Palmetto Family. So if you'd like to donate to our work, do that, please. This podcast, this show is free of charge. And if you click subscribe or follow on your podcast feed or on YouTube, we're not signing up. We would like for you to sign up for the mailing list, but it doesn't sign you up for a mailing list. It's just free. Give us a 5-star rating and review. Those things just help us, help bump us up, get us in front of more people, and then share this with your friends and family. If you're watching on Facebook right now, just click the share button. And you can write, up top, these guys are the smartest I've ever seen. Share. Done. Look at that. If you don't believe that's the case, then don't write it. But do what you want. Share it with your friends and family. Let them know what's going on. And as we get closer to Election Day, we'll have one more show before Election Day, at least one, talking about whatever. I promise you, we're 12 days away. Something's going to happen. And then maybe my favorite show, because I've never done a post-presidential one, here, we've done post, midterm, post-presidential general election breakdown. Not a mental breakdown, just a breakdown of everything that happens on November 5th. Because I would like to think that by the end of the night on November 5th, we do know what happens.
That would be nice.
Fingers crossed. We'll see. I had a really quick, we got to get out of here, but my brother-in-law is planning on going to the Grand Canyon right before Election Day and like for several days after. And he's like, everybody on the trip has said, we don't want to know. No one tell us. We just want to be out there and not know and then come back and we'll find out. And I said, how long are you going to be gone for? He's like, until like the 12th or the 15th. I said, oh, don't worry. We won't know either. You're fine. You'll be in the same boat as all the rest of us, but hopefully that's not the case. But we look forward to being with you next week as we talk more about all these issues and more that I'm sure will come to the forefront by then. And then we are looking forward to seeing how those who vote biblical values influence this election up and down the ballot, whether nationally or here in South Carolina. For Kevin Caiello, for Dr. Steve Pettit, for Randy Page, I'm Justin Hall. Thank you so much for watching and listening to the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. It's this one, the Palmetto Family Matters Show.